Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
2025, are you ready to rock? Dave's Killer Bread is ready to rock 2025 and your reset this January with killer taste, killer nutrition, and a killer sweepstakes to win a VIP concert prize pack with round-trip airfare, luxury hotel stay, and much more. Text RESET to 73876 and enter for a chance to win Dave's Killer Bread. Bread amplified. No purchase necessary. Visit daveskillerbread.com/reset for details.
Welcome to Elixir Mix, your weekly Elixir podcast talking with members of the community. My name is Mark Erickson, and today we're joined by Josh Adams.
Hi.
Sophie DiBenedetto.
Hi, guys.
And today we have our special guest, Mariano.
Hi.
So, Mariano, before we jump in and talk with you, which I'm excited to do because we have a lot of cool stuff, he's just to give an idea of what we're talking about, he's done one awesome articles about React Core and Partisan, which are two extremely cool technologies that are in the Erlang and Elixir ecosystem. But before we do that, we got to say hi to Sophie. So Sophie was a guest last week, and we're inviting her to join us as a guest host today and see if she'll get to test out if we're nice enough to hang around with for a little while. So Sophie, why don't you just kind of give a little introduction to maybe a little background to just for people who may be new to you.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, thanks for having me. Super, super excited to be joining you guys. I guess a little bit about me. I've been working with Elixir for a couple years now, both just kind of personally for fun, side projects when I was first learning, and then more recently at the Flatiron School, where we've been doing some really cool things, I think, with Elixir in order to provide our students with an in-browser, sort of like very full, rich development environment. I am also part of the MPEX NYC organizing committee, so I'll probably plug that every now and then. You guys will hear a little bit about it. And currently sitting here in Brooklyn, staring at my dog who is staring at me, and that's going to be happening throughout the course of this episode.
I know your dog is somewhat famous, makes a number of appearances in your presentations.
Yes, very true. That's a credit to my partner who is an artist, and she draws all of the illustrations of him for my slide decks, which is a really nice way to get like a very polished look for free.
Very cool. All right. Well, Mariano, I would love to hear a little bit about where you work and kind of what you're doing. Could you give us a little bit of background?
Sure. I'm co-founder of a really small startup called Instadeck. We build tools that let non-programmers or people without skills consume data, analyze it, aggregate it, change it a little bit, and build visualizations, live visualizations, and publish them on the web. And our backends are all the first version was Erlang, the second version was FNA, and the third one I'm starting to develop is Elixir. I'm going through all the languages on the Vim. And so yeah, that's kind of where I work. I work from home, so
nice. All right. And so I'm curious, because you have had a lot of experience with the Beam, are you currently doing anything in your projects that you're working on that you're experimenting with React Core and Partisan?
Yes. The previous backend was built on React Core. So yeah, it ran for 2 years in production. And the current one is not using it runs on Partisan, but it doesn't use any like cool features of Partisan. And the new one, the one I'm building with Elixir, I'm planning to use Partisan heavily and maybe not React Core. I have an idea for a new way of doing distribution of load between nodes. That's why I'm also interested in TLA, because when you're working with like distributed system algorithms, you really want to be sure that not only the implementation is right, but also that the algorithm is right. So I'm going to be basing the new architecture on Partisan and Elixir.
Cool. So what is TLA?
TLA Plus is a programming language, a tool for temporary logic of actions. It's created by the creator of LaTeX and also the creator of Paxos, the distributed consensus algorithm that kind of kicked off all the movement about consensus algorithms. And he was fighting to marry like the succinctness, do you say in English, of mathematics and the expressivity of set theory and set algebra with something that can be run and can be used to prove algorithms. So he created this language called TLA Plus, which is a language used to model algorithms. And the tool has, it's kind of like a programming language, but it looks a little bit like math. And you use a model checker that checks that the model you specified of your algorithm is actually right. And it has a brother or sister called, I forget the name, Calc something, which is a language that looks more like a programming language that compiles to TLA. And it's I find it useful to, as there's an expression that says that you should learn a programming language if it changes the way you think about programming. And I've experienced that learning like C, Python, Erlang, Lisp, and now TLA Plus. I've been following, like, I've read two books, I've read all the blog posts online, I follow the series that Lampor provides on his website, but I never used it to specify anything, but already learning about it and seeing examples already makes me think clearer about the design before implementing it, and I want to actually try to use it to specify algorithms.
Interesting. That's really cool. I think I totally agree with you that there's a big benefit to learning new languages or new frameworks or anything if it causes you to think differently. Just kind of challenges your mental model. So I would love to jump into React Core. Maybe you can give us. I think it might be a term for a number of people. So maybe you can just give a little background about what it is and kind of how it works.
Sure. So I will go with a little bit of history of why it exists. Many years ago, in software terms, Amazon published a paper called usually the Dynamo paper, which specified the architecture they use for their scalable, highly available, not consistent data store, key value store. And they specified what is called the Dynamo architecture. And later, the people at Basho, a company that no longer exists, decided to create a key value store, an open source key value store based on that architecture using Erlang. So they created React, which is a key value store that still exists. Now it's like in a foundation, in a community. It's still being developed and used. And they used this paper and implemented the architecture in Erlang. And at some point they said like there's value in this architecture outside of React. So they decided to extract the core of React into a framework of its own. And so they announced and published React Core as an open source project that's separate from React, which React uses, of course. And other people used it. You can check the one from the top of my mind, but on the last chapter of this series, resources, there's a list of many things that use React Core, but DalmatinerDB, which is a time series database, uses it. And so many people started using it to build distributed systems that follow this Dynamo architecture on the Beam. And me being interested in distributed systems and being interested on the Beam, I started trying to use React Core. And at some point, like it was hard to get documentation, so at some point I started doing it. So basically it was like extracting the framework or the architecture out of React, which implemented a paper called Dynamo, the Dynamo architecture. And after that, it became its own thing, and I've been part of trying to make it more popular, because I don't know if people like it, but I call it like the Ruby on Rails of distributed systems. It's the easiest way to build, together with Microsoft Orleans. I think they are the two easiest ways to start building actual production-ready distributed systems on top of giants. Like, you get the foundation, you implement like the callbacks, you have like a skeleton of the project, and you just put your code in places, and magically you have these properties of these systems.
That is really cool. So thank you for that little background. So Basho was an Erlang-centered consultancy, and you mentioned that it went out of business as a going concern, as a business.
Yeah.
But what I'm really impressed with, like, so you have a link to the show notes to the GitHub for React Core. It is under the Basho GitHub organization, but this is still actively being developed. Like, as of this recording, the last commit was 18 days ago. And so I just want people to be aware that even though it was created by a consultancy that doesn't exist any longer, it still is actively moving forward and progress is being made.
Yeah, I can add some context. So basically, React is being used by many big organizations like the NHS in the UK and Bet365, to name some I can remember. And I think also the Danish health ministry or something like that. So when Basho went out of business, these organizations wanted React and React Core to keep being developed. So Bet365 bought Basho, like what was left of the company, and open sourced everything and created kind of like a structure. I don't know if it's a foundation or what, that employs people to keep developing React and React Core. So React has new features and has new releases, and React Core has new releases. And what happened when Basho went silent, and up until a couple of months ago, it's that some people did some forks, and now the work that's been done in the community is to merge all these forks and to have like one official fork, which is the Basho React Core. Before, people may, if they search for React Core on Hex, they will see React Core, React Core NG, and I have some forks too, and many people have forks. Some research universities, one in Germany and one in Portugal, have their own forks, and also Christopher Michael John has his own fork. We all have like our own forks. Now we are trying to merge it back to one, because it's really confusing for people. We are trying to do it the Ruby on Rails of distributed systems, and when they search for React Core, they find like 5-6 active forks.
So you'd say you're in marketing.
Invasive fruit fly populations have been found in the Bay Area, and we need your help. These invasive pests can infest over 250 types of fruits and vegetables and could have devastating consequences for our food supply, including our ability to grow fruits and vegetables at home. To help, don't bring produce or plants into California from other areas. Cooperate with agriculture officials and inspect and report signs of fruit flies or maggots. See if your neighborhood is at risk and learn more at stopinvasivepests.com.
Yeah, I'm like the unofficial PR of Christopher Michael John, and like the unofficial cheerleader of React Core, let's say.
That's awesome. He needs PR. He needs a cheerleader. Yeah,
he's awesome.
So one of the things I want to highlight, and one of the reasons we wanted you to come on and share some of this information with us, is you did a series of blog posts talking about React Core and on Partisan. So using Partisan as like the node connection mechanism and doing an Elixir tutorial, which I think is really great, because there might be a lot more documentation around using React Core with Erlang just because of its history. So I think it's great that you're doing some coverage of how you can use Elixir with that too. So maybe you could just give people an idea of what they would find by looking at this series of blog posts.
Yeah, so the biggest... I think because I started doing, when I was implementing the backend on React Core, I started like documenting my discovery process, because it was for me also learning. And that was like a really long readme at some point, and then it became like the little React Core book. And at that moment, React Core with all these forks and with also with Erlang evolving really fast at that point, now it's kind of stabilizing. The code examples I was publishing were not building anymore. People had problems with dependencies and stuff like that. And So I did like a new update that was called the ReaCore tutorial, which was basically just the code examples of the little ReaCore book, but updated so that they build and run again. And I noticed that all the time the difficulties of people was basically setting up the environment and making like the ping pong example. After that, the hard part was just basically knowing what code to put where and what each callback meant. And the third big roadblock, but if you arrive at it, you're almost done, is how do you handle what's called handoff, which is how do you live migrate data between vnodes. And so I always focus on the setup, like get a project running and understand the concepts. When people were trying to use my code examples in Erlang by migrating them to Elixir, they mentioned that they had really weird problems that I didn't have, and I didn't know why. Then later I learned why. So I say, okay, there's this need. And there was a tutorial, a series of Medium blog posts I think it's GPAD, the handle on Twitter, on ReaCore and Elixir. But also they got outdated, and also they were just the code of the callbacks, not like a Git project that you can clone and try to run. And so I tried to update it again and gave a tutorial at Elixir Conf LA in Medellin this year. And next week I'm giving it in this one too. So I already forgot what your question was.
Yeah, so we were just discussing kind of what some of your blog posts cover.
Oh, yeah. So what it covers, yeah, is still like a short mention of what it is. I will add this link to that. And then how to set up a new project. What the callbacks are and what code to put to build an in-memory key value store using ETS as the back store. And the last one is how to implement and handoff to migrate these keys from one vnode to the other. So that is to be really practical and to give you code, but complete code, not just like snippets that you don't know where to put or you put somewhere and it doesn't compile because something is missing. I want to give you a whole project. So I also build a companion project that's called CivilDB, which is a key value store I explained, but each step on the guide is a commit on the project. So you can just check out that commit and see the history and see the diff and see everything I'm telling you is actually a complete project that builds. I hope it keeps building. For that, I build a dependency that's called, I don't know how it's called, Uniendo, because it's because the fork from Christopher for ReaCore was called Unir, which in Spanish means to join, and Uniendo means joining. Just a play of words, which this library does is like an umbrella dependency that brings all the dependencies in the right order, in the right versions with the right overrides, so that you just get one dependency and your project gets ReaCore. So I think that was one of the biggest additions to all the documentation that there is. And the other is, like, what I'm trying to do right now is to build like a Docker image and maybe a Docker Compose, so that people play with clustering without having to do the tricks of having different environments to have a cluster on the same machine without clashing ports and stuff like that.
Something I think people would like to understand is when they hear about React Core and they're thinking about their own business situations or their own projects or problems, the big difficulty may be understanding how does this fit and what kinds of problems is this really good at solving? So I wonder if you could speak to that.
Sure. Since it's at like a generic architecture, it's like if somebody says like solve this problem using, I don't know, three layers architecture, it's really generic, it doesn't tell you much. And to know if it applies and if it doesn't apply, I think examples and like a description of generally what you want to do, the problem that you should have when you try to use React Core is you want to build an application that you can horizontally scale without masters. Usually there are masters or primaries. There are two type of distributed systems. Ones where each node is equal to all the others, and when you want to scale, you just add a new node and the nodes like rearrange who owns what. This is the Dynamo architecture. And you have other architectures that are more in the middle. If you read the big table paper by Google, where the cluster is split in two, in three. You have like a Chavi, which is a consensus cluster with five nodes. You have the primary or master, it's called master in that paper. that knows, and then you have like worker nodes, which handle work, but the one who decides who works on what, on who owns what, is the master. And whenever you want to do something, you have to ask the primary, like, who owns this? I need to do something on this key, who owns it? And it gives you the reply, it says node number 5, and then you can cache that resolution and talk directly with node number 5. And at some point, the node number 5 might tell you, I'm no longer working with that key, and you can ask again. And so that's like recapitulating, if that's an English word, like you have this primary worker architecture that's also distributed systems, but you have this more distributed system architecture where all the nodes are equal, and basically they work with each other to distribute the load and migrate the data and decide who owns what. React Core is the later. You don't have this primary worker or primary replica distinction, and you want to build something that scales horizontally. As I said, you just basically, when you want to scale, you add a new node. This new node joins the cluster, and the other nodes give them slices of the, let's call it, namespace. Like, you are working with keys. They may be a key value store. They may be a pub sub system. It may be an MQTT broker. It may be like a Kafka clone. It may even be like a chat system, like a video game. How do you call it? Room, where like you join and you find people and stuff like that. Usually something where you have a key that identifies what you want to do, and you dispatch an operation on the key and the data for the operation, and then the system decides which node works on that. So I already mentioned some examples, like you could implement something like an MQTT broker with it, something like RabbitMQ, a key value store, a pub/sub system, a WebSocket system, a chat room system, anything that you can say, okay, when I'm doing this operation, this key identifies, like, it's like an identity of the thing. It can be the username, it can be the session, it can be the channel. For this podcast, it's the meeting ID we are using. So we will all land on the same server, and that server will keep the state of our meeting.
So it sounds like it's a masterless ring topology.
Exactly.
Where it's like it's using like a hash space. Like, so I might hash the keys and those get distributed among all the different nodes. So I can just scale up by adding more nodes, and there is no master. They just kind of like repartition themselves.
Exactly.
And so then when I'm able to, so like, is a data value stored in multiple nodes in case one of those nodes goes down or is temporarily unavailable?
Yes. That's called quorum-based reads and writes, which is supported by React Core. Luckily, you have to implement like a one thing and you are there. Basically, what you say is, okay, I want to do this operation and I want to send this operation to 3 nodes, and I consider that this operation succeeded when at least 2 nodes replied. Or you can say, I want to send this operation to 5 nodes and I consider it a success when 3 replied. Or you can say, I want to send to 1, or you can say, I want to send to 3, and it says when the 3 replied. So you want to be really sure that it was written. And that's that level of consistency, you decide, it's your from your business domain. But the framework gives you already this. You don't have to think a lot about it. It's already supported.
Yeah, I always thought of React Core as, back in the day, there was the joke that any Basho presentation must contain the golden hash ring slide.
Yeah, it's a secret.
I always think of React Core. I think of React Core as the library that implements that slide.
Exactly. That ring is maybe people will understand it if they never saw the ring or don't know what consistent hashing is. Some systems or some architectures support what's called sharding, which is basically when you scale, you decide like a slice of your key space. For example, the users from the A to the F, go to this server, and from F to C, go to this other server. You do the partitioning, the sharding manually. You specify like the ranges and you configure it and you bring new servers and then you migrate it somehow. Like React Core, this ring is basically, it's like auto sharding. And how it does auto sharding, trying to maintain a property which is each server on the ring should theoretically receive this almost the same amount of requests as any other server. You don't want one server to be handling like twice or thrice the amount of requests as the other one. So what it does to, because ReaCore doesn't know if your key space, for example, your usernames, you may have more usernames with A than with, I don't know, X. What it does is you give the key, the username, and it hashes it. And this hashing operation gives you a uniform distribution over the like the space of possible values. And that means that like statistically all your nodes will receive the same amount of requests unless like Justin Bieber appears. And yeah, it's like auto-sharding if people understand what sharding is and don't know what consistent hashing is.
Maybe it'd be good to jump in, just mention what Partisan is. So that's another library that you're using with this. And this, so Partisan, I just want to make sure people understand, can be used without React Core. It is a standalone library, but maybe you could help us understand what problem that's solving.
Sure. So a little bit of history again. I like to go over why something exists. So the Beam provides distribution using something called Distributed Erlang, which is a protocol that allows you to cluster Beam virtual machines. And it provides this property that you get a PID, a process ID, and then you send it a message, and the distributed Erlang will do the work of finding where this PID is and deliver the message. How it's solved is when you join a virtual machine, a Beam virtual machine to a cluster, it will do what's called a full mesh, which is every virtual machine knows about every other virtual machine. And there's a property called Metcalfe's law, which is like the number of connections between nodes grows, I think, exponentially with the number of nodes. So for a small number of nodes, you keep like a small number of connections because each virtual machine keeps an open socket with each other virtual machine, and it sends pings to know if they are alive or not for monitoring and stuff like this. And this has... It works great. It's transparent. You send a message, it gets there. You can monitor PIDs on other machines, and you get a message when they crash or when the node crash and stuff like that. But this has a theoretical or practical limit that, depending on the workload you're doing, between 50 and 100 nodes, your cluster will start to degrade performance. Because if each node has 50 TCP connections to other 50 nodes, and they are all pinging all the time, it's a lot of work just to be a cluster, and you have to add the workload of your application on top. And other problems, like it's just one, all the messages from one node to the other to keep the serialization order of the messages is sent via one socket. And up until Erlang 21, each message was sent as one thing. So if you send like a 5 megabyte binary, it generated something called head of line blocking, which is like all many small messages will like block behind this huge message up until it was delivered and confirmed. And this was improving in R22, where they split messages in smaller chunks. So this is the performance of distributed Erlang improved with this. But still, if you go to partisan.cloud, you can see the paper and the benchmarks, where I'm getting ahead of myself. So Partisan says, look, we want to try different ways of clustering Erlang nodes, different architectures, and we want to try different algorithms and different distributed strategies, because sometimes you don't want to keep ordering between messages that don't care about each other. For example, you may care about all the messages from one node to the other to be ordered, but only for one username or for one session ID, but for the others, you don't care. Or you want to have two channels open, one to send big payloads and the other one to send heartbeats and stuff like that. And so what Christopher and Michael John built on his ongoing PhD thesis is like a Partisan, which is re-implementing distributed Erlang as a platform where you can plug different algorithms and different strategies and different membership algorithms at runtime. So you always use the same API, but at runtime you can change how do you want to like cluster the nodes and how you want to keep the membership information and how you want to route the messages. And with that, you can choose like fine tune at runtime what what's better for your workload. And also, because distributed Erlang is implemented in C, it's on the VM, it's not a place where you will go to make changes or put like a logging line or put like a tracing, because it's C. You don't want to be touching the VM. Also, because if it crashes, it crashes everything. And the partition is implemented in Erlang. So it's cool when the foundation you are on is in the same language you're using, because you want to like stack traces, and you can trace and you can touch the code and try something new. And this is like how Partition started. It was like, what if we make a pluggable distributed Erlang? Basically, we can try different things. We can use it as a research instrument for people to try new algorithms, new papers. What if we try this workload? And what he did later to run the benchmarks on these papers is to migrate React Core to Partition, so that he could implement a key value store and benchmark like the key value store running on React Core on distributed Erlang against React Core running on Partition, and what was the difference. And the difference is crazy, because you're comparing C implementation of distributed Erlang tune for 30 years against an Erlang implementation of distributed Erlang built by a PhD, and the performance is better on the Partition, which is really cool.
That is cool. So there's a lot there. And so I will make sure we put links to all of that in the show notes. There are, just so people are aware, I encourage them to go check out your articles. You've created 6 at least so far. And so we'll have all of those, a link to those blogs. But also, I want to make sure people are aware of, you did mention this already, but you have an open source project, CivilDB, that people can check out and experiment with, so they can actually just get it running and see the code, how it's all put together. And so I think it's an awesome resource for people. Like, if you are interested in starting to play with Partition or React Core, and you'd like to understand how these pieces work together and how you could benefit or build a system like this, just be able to more quickly experiment and see if this is appropriate for your situation, it's a great resource to check out.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited that you did that, and also that apparently it's not nearly as much trouble as it used to be when I was first playing with React Core. Because I had to use like a 3-release-old version of Erlang to even run anything that anyone had online.
Yeah, that my main contribution is to try to make it easy and more accessible. Like, I'm not the guy writing the papers. I'm not the guy like doing the crazy implementations. I just when I see something that's really good and not many people are like finding, my part is just trying to make it more easier to try, easy to understand, easy to follow, and stuff like that.
So accessibility,
yeah.
Well, maybe we could transition a little bit. I wanted to talk to you about what you're doing with the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation. So maybe you could just mention a little bit what you're doing there.
Yeah, so I'm a member of the working group on documentation. We are trying to unify a little bit the tool set and the work of to start Erlang and Elixir, so that you have the Erlang documentation available on Elixir tools. Also to try to, because I come from the Erlang community, we learn a lot from Elixir, and you have beautiful documentation. So we want to try to make use of all these tool chain tool sets and styles and guidelines and stuff like that. So we are working on ways to translate, because the Erlang documentation is shows its age, is built on XML and a really long and weird tool set. So we are working on translating those XML files into something that can be consumed by the Elixir toolchain, so that it can embed documentation on the Elixir ecosystem, but also so that we can render the Erlang documentation on the kind of Elixir style, not necessarily like purple, but maybe red or something, but as nice as the Elixir documentation looks like. And this is like the thing we're working on, because the working group is young and new. But after that, we are going to work on everything that has to do with making it easier to consume and build and share documentation on the beam, basically, and not duplicate effort when there's no sense to do it. And the second is the language interoperability working group, of which I'm, I will be, if approved, the chair. And this is similar, but instead of being about documentation, it's about making it easier, also to avoid duplication. Like the Erlang language already has a standard library, and the Elixir library has a smaller standard library, but really powerful. And I'm talking personally here, not for the other members, but what I would like to have is that nobody else on the ecosystem has to create a new like enum or a new list data type or a protocol, that they can reuse the Elixir ones or they can reuse the Erlang ones, so that whenever somebody publishes a library that's useful for me, I don't care which languages. Maybe I care, but I should care the least possible, so that we can move forward faster without reinventing the wheel. And also, personally, I think it's interesting for the Beam to be a platform to try new things. Like that's why also I do the ReaCore and the Partisan things, because I would like Erlang to be like the target platform by default to try new distributed system things. And I would like also it to be the target platform to try new programming language paradigms. How would it look like a programming language that abstracts over distribution and stuff like that, where Christopher worked on LASP, which is kind of like that. But I would like to push it so that if you want to try a really crazy programming language concept, you have so much already fixed, like kind of like ReaCore, but for languages. And what we are working at the beginning is to make it easy for people to use Elixir libraries on Erlang, for people to use Elixir structs and protocols on other languages in general. And what else? Those are like, and also the Unified, there's many people working on IDE integration for languages, for Elixir, for Erlang, try to get them all together and also not reinvent the wheel, so that there's a platform. And when somebody does like a hobby programming language for the Beam, they just plug into some callbacks on the language server and they get instant integration with an IDE, with Visual Studio Code, for example, and they plug in something and they have nice documentation. So we want to make it easier to share inside the platform.
It's really cool. Yeah, having read your blog posts on React Core just ahead of today's conversation, I'm like not at all surprised to hear that you're involved with the documentation working group, because I feel like your writing had this really nice, like sort of didactic flavor to it, like all the setup stuff and all the dependencies were taken care of. And, you know, having been a teacher myself, I'm like always trying to strike this balance between giving you everything you need so that you can focus on the actual hard part, you know, without making it too easy. Yeah, so it's really cool and exciting to hear about what you guys are doing by way of documentation and some of this Elixir Erlang interop. I mean, I think you sort of already spoke to this, but I'd just be curious to hear your take on, you know, why this is something that we need in our community, in the Elixir community, in the Beam community.
I think I am part of the Erlang community before Elixir existed, actually. And there was a lot of people and new people coming in, like complaining about the problems that Erlang had, which were kind of all solved by Elixir in a sense. But at the beginning, some people on the Erlang side got defensive, they are stealing our thunder, let's say. They are stealing our virtual machine and our libraries, and they are saying that it's like a new language. And there was something to that, like there were people like wrapping libraries with like 15 lines of code and not mentioning the underlying library and stuff like that. But after that, I think the Erlang community understood that Elixir was this breath of fresh air and this impulse. I don't think I'm saying something new when I say that the Elixir community is bigger than the Erlang community. And this process of, okay, they have something to teach us and they are building stuff that's really cool, like structs, like protocols, like documentations, like also culture, like attitude and attitude to beginners and ease of use and stuff like that. I guess to generalize it, to make it work also for smaller communities like LFE and any other new language like Gleam, like Alpaca, and Clojure, which is a Clojure implementation from Erlang. We want to, everything that the Erlang community has and learned and everything that the Elixir community built and knows and learns, to unify our effort, to not duplicate, to not fight, to push forward as a platform, and to provide all of these learning and resources and tools to these smaller communities that are trying some cool stuff, so that they don't have to like implement a language server, implement a documentation tool chain, to implement like integration with documentation from Erlang and stuff like that, and to make like the Beam community be something that where we are all like, we are, somebody may be part of the Gleam community, but we are all part of the Beam community, and we don't waste effort, because there's a lot yet still to do, and it will be a waste of effort if every single community is reinventing everything. And if we are non-interoperable, in the sense that I see a cool library that implements like some crazy algorithm, but it's implemented in Alpaca, so I have to like implement it again because I can't use it.
Yeah, I'm definitely pro anything that's good for the community and allows me to be lazier. So
yeah, me too.
All right, well, I think we're up on time. Thank you, Mariano, for coming on and talking with us. So let's go ahead and transition to picks. Josh, do you want to go first?
Sure. I need to grab the link, but there's a talk that I found out about when we were talking right before this podcast, and that's my pick. I have not watched it yet, but it is Rewriting GitHub Pages with React Core, and so it's on like today's watch list. Anyway, that's it for me.
Sophie.
Yeah, I have two. So one is a blog post that a coworker of mine just published on our sort of engineering team's blog on Medium about how to compose queries in Ecto. And I just thought it really made something click for me, because I feel like it just took me a really long time to kind of grok Ecto and kind of have it feel as natural as working with someone like Active Record. And I feel like I've built, you know, composable queries in AREL, and, you know, really loved how flexible and dynamic that kind of was able to be, and didn't really feel like I could get to that same place with Ecto. And this was just a really nice post that felt like a fun read and helped make a lot of things click for me. So definitely recommend checking it out. And secondly, non-programming pick. So I should preface this by saying I really love to cook, but I don't like to bake. It's too exact. You have to follow a recipe and I'll mess it up every time. But someone recommended this very fancy looking burnt Basque cheesecake recipe to me. And it is the absolute only thing that I've ever baked that came out looking exactly like the picture. So whether you're new to baking or you just really want to impress your friends at a holiday party, definitely check out this recipe.
Cool. All right. I've got two. It was a video I watched yesterday. It's a 10-minute video on YouTube that was with Francesco Cesarini. He's with the Erlang Solutions. And it was a great little video. He's talking about immutability. And immutability is, especially when people are coming new to functional programming and that kind of mindset, they can really struggle with it. But he kind of goes through how it works, the benefits, and along with mutability, there are times when you want to use mutability or immutability in the different situations, and he kind of talks about those. So it's a great resource. The other one, I got this from a coworker. I love this. It's a declassified short CIA manual on sabotage from 1944. So immediately, there's a whole bunch of it that is just not applicable. You know, it's like, you know, talking about how cars work and how you can pull certain cables off to make it not work or something like that. But this, there's a section titled General Interference with Organizations and Production. And that is totally relevant today. Now, I'm not suggesting you sabotage your organizations that you're in, but instead check it out and think about how the people and the places where you've worked and see if you see some of these same behaviors. So I'm just going to list off a few of them because they're funny. So like one says, insist on doing everything through channels. Never permit shortcuts to be taken in order to expedite decisions. Or when possible, refer all matters to committees for, quote, further study and consideration. Attempt to make the committees as large as possible, never less than 5. So if you start to see these kinds of patterns in companies where you work or anything, it's like you can kind of read this and say, oh, I should do the opposite. I should make sure we're having small committees and people can take shortcuts to make sure things get done faster. And so it's just a fun one. Like another one is bring up irrelevant issues as frequently as possible. Maybe you know that guy or gal who does that in the meetings, you know, so maybe you're that person. So maybe
but also if your goal, if your goal is to sabotage, it's also a useful resource.
Yes. Yeah, so those are two fun ones to just check out. Mariano, how about you?
Yeah. So as I mentioned previously, I have to say first, I'm not a TDD guy. I'm not a test first guy or a heavy unit tester. But I'm really interested lately in like, there's like a spectrum of testing from unit tests, integration tests. But I'm interested more in the other side of the spectrum, which is property-based testing and specifications. And so for property-based testing on Erlang, you can use Proper, and I think there's a wrapper for Elixir too. And there's a really good book called Property-Based Testing with Proper, Erlang, and Elixir from Fred Hebert. I hope I pronounced his last name correctly, which covers how to use Proper to use property-based testing with a library called Proper. And farther right on the spectrum is TLA Plus, which I already mentioned. And the book is called Practical TLA Plus by Hillel Wayne. And teaches you how to use TLA Plus and this other language that I'm going to remember the name. Let me see. Pluscal, to specify algorithms in like increasing levels of complexity and to use the model checker to check if your implementation is correct. So as I said, I guess everybody should explore the whole spectrum of how to test and specify your algorithms and find like the sweet spot. I think all of them are useful. I think the farther like to the specification side you go, the more it's a tool of thought of design. More maybe you don't like write the specification or maybe you don't keep it up to date. But the fact of trying to fit your mental model into a model that can be checked mathematically, even if it doesn't even compile, should give you a better model to start with than like some boxes and arrows on a blackboard.
Great. All right. Well, Mariano, thank you for coming on and sharing with us how people can be using React, React Core, and Partisan, and for your blog articles. I appreciate that. So if people would like to connect with you online or follow you, where should they go to do that?
I'm Wariano Guerra, like my name, but with a W at the beginning, on Twitter. And I'm Mariano Guerra at GitHub, and I'm marianoguerra.org on the web. In my Twitter account, I talk mainly about software. Like it's not, I don't talk about other things. Maybe about music and politics sometimes, but mostly about software. So it's a central point to follow. And my blog is mainly post technical content, so both of those. And my GitHub is full of repositories that are long dead, but you can check there are some active ones.
Great. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on Elixir Mix.